What's going on, guys? My name is Dylan Cook, or Mr. Taza, and I am your host today for the Nerdable Podcast. With us, we got, starting from top to bottom in the list.
Oh, look at me all up top.
You're on the top, dude. You're, like, important or something.
Thanks.
It's almost I'm like you
like
it.
Like Toy Story.
You like Toy Story? That's your new bio?
Yes.
What's so special about Toy Story?
Oh, come on. Like, you even have to ask.
No, but, like, I mean, there's a lot of things in the world to like, but, like, that's specifically what you shout out. I'm kind of curious.
Toys come like, to life when you're not in the room. What is there not to love about that?
I mean, like, there's a lot of things in life to love. And that's the number one?
Yes.
All right, I'm done with this. Gage.
Hello.
Hi, how's it going, friend? How are you today?
I'm good. I'm doing very well.
Nice, nice.
Favorite Pixar movie, go.
Favorite Pixar movie is probably Toy Story 3.
Toy Story 3? That's an interesting choice.
Very specific.
Well, that series is probably the best Pixar one that I... Or Monsters, Inc.'s pretty good, too. And I like A Bug's Life a lot more than most people do.
So. That's fair. That's fair.
I like Bug's Life.
I can't remember, like, anything about Bug's Life.
That's great. I love that movie. Flick.
Well, awesome. Flick leaves the colony because he feels undervalued, mm-hmm. and then he goes and finds some bugs to get rid of.
He joins the circus.
Yep. Well, he doesn't know that they're circus bugs. Anyway, who else? Who else do we have?
Yeah, who else we got? Next on the list is
your boy? Or...
Yes.
Okay. Hello, right. Hello. It's Brady, your boy. Garbage video game player extraordinaire.
Yeah, you were reminiscing about your Magic stream the other night where apparently you just didn't even get to play.
Nah, I mean, that's the way it be sometimes, though.
Favorite Pixar movie, go.
Put me on the spot there. I don't know. I kind of grew up on Finding Nemo and somewhat Cars. But I think my favorite has to be Monsters, Inc.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good taste. Yeah. And then...
I think they got their
approval.
Dal is here. Yeah, feeling pretty good today, guys.
Now, you know favorite what the question's going to be.
Well, I have no idea what the question might be. I'm kidding. I know what the question is. Favorite Pixar movie, Incredibles. The Incredibles is so good.
It is good.
Who made that noise? Who made that noise? Come on.
Me.
No. What? Why are you a hater?
Even Spud's hating too. He says he agrees with none of us.
What?
What kind of haters, dude?
It's nice to not have him shouting in the podcast, though, to be fair.
That's only a matter of time. Now he's on a vendetta to get in here.
I see that there's no love for Ratatouille.
Haven't seen it yet. Well,
I was going to mention it, but like it can't be one of my favorites.
Ratatouille, who thinks that movie's good?
I really like Patton Oswalt.
I mean, yeah, but like...
He's from this area that I'm living in.
Oh yeah? I didn't know that actually.
Actually, real close to me.
Neat.
Not that it matters to anybody.
So now that we got introductions, who's got some hot fire topics that they wanna bring on board for us? Because I know somebody's gotta.
I mean, I'm just we usually put Aaron on the spot because I know he never brings anything.
I have things.
Oh, holy shit! Oh, this is better.
Am I actually kickstarting this?
Yeah.
Okay.
I believe in you.
So my topic of conversation is Battalion 1944 and High Expectations. So last weekend was the PC and sort of indie game expo Rezzed in the UK. And one of the sort of big highlights for me that I really wanted to go check out was Battalion 1944, which is by created by the same people who made the Turing Test, which... I'm not sure whether that says a lot, but basically the idea was they wanted to bring the first person multiplayer shooter back to sort of like old school or, you know, old school new sort of thing. So, you know, they're getting rid of classes, stupid jetpacks and kind of doing a to the core first person shooter based in World War II. So like, you know, the original Call of Duty and Call of Duty 2, maybe even like World at War and things like that. So the game was announced, it launched on Kickstarter, everyone ran for the hills and just threw their money at it. And yeah, there's huge expectations for this game to kind of go back to the roots of, you know, the first person shooter, multiplayer shooter back in World War II, just this classic, I guess, run and gun experience, I guess. And so yeah, it was announced about a week before the expo that it was going to be there. And I was super excited to go. It was, as I mentioned in my sort of hands-on impressions of the game, that it was one of the only games that I saw there and that I've ever seen that has had a queue, which for that particular expo is really surprising, because it's usually quite chill, it's quite casual, people are just wandering in and seeing what games are available. The ones that are usually quite busy, people usually kind of just crowd around them rather than actually having organized queues. So yeah, there's huge expectations for this game, and while I went in like hoping for a lot, it's still in the very, very sort of early stages of development. So what I kind of experienced, which is nothing to what the game's going to be, like what I'm about to say isn't anything to kind of judge the game by, especially at this early stage, but there really wasn't a lot to write home about. The visuals weren't great. It felt like it looked like an old school World War II shooter, but you know, the visuals aren't final. In terms of gameplay and everything though, that was absolutely fantastic. You know, there was no pressure to make sure that your loadout was fantastic. You got to choose one of two guns, which was the Thompson and the well, I was on the American team, so what's the rifle that's always really
popular? The M1 Garand.
Yes, that one. So
bada bing.
Yeah, a point choice of those two, and that was it. You're jumping into the game. You've got a grenade, you've got your gun, you've got a sidearm. That's it. You know, run and shoot your heart out. And it was thoroughly enjoyable. Like, I loved it. It was absolutely brilliant. But I fear that the game might suffer from everyone's high expectations of the thing that they're promising.
Yeah, no, I get you there. What the first thing that stood out to me was when you were talking about all this was, I can't believe World at War is considered like old school now.
Yeah, I know.
I'm not even old.
It was. What was it? 2008. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like 9 years ago. Fuck.
And thanks for reminding
me. Yeah, that's almost a decade.
So how does Battalion like? How early did they say how early on the game is in development?
I think they possibly have, but I don't know right now. But I think it's definitely, or hopefully, very early stages. I think they literally just made a playable build for the event.
Gotcha. And then like, how did it compare to like modern shooters that we're getting right now?
Well, I think the problem that is it Bulkhead Interactive? I should really know this. I think it's Bulkhead.
Yeah, Bulkhead Interactive. I got your article up right here.
Ah, cool. Yeah. So, I think the problem that they have is the unfortunate launch of Battlefield 1.
Sure. Yeah.
That set the bar incredibly high, because my friend Oliver, who one of the kind of co-founders of the site, kind of, you know, he joined very early stages. We're really good friends now. He was super excited for this game. Like, he was like, if you're going to Res, you need to check this out. I backed it on Kickstarter, and once I'd like seen it and said, oh, it's great, he was like, oh, how does it compare to Battlefield 1? And that immediately, I was just like, this is what is going to happen with this game. Mm-hmm. Everyone is going to be looking at Battlefield 1 as the sort of, I guess, the bar of how this game needs to perform. And
yeah,
that people are going to have such high expectations for this game.
I don't know if
that's... I don't know if necessarily high expectations is the best way of wording it, but like being compared to like a AAA release, like every single game when it comes out, like every short shooter immediately gets compared to COD, like even more so with Titanfall, which is literally developed by ex-COD developers. But something like like that, which is purposely trying to be more old school, especially when a AAA game launched that was making an effort to be a bit more old school in theme, not necessarily gameplay as much, but
I don't think
just recently
I kind of think that it's an expectations management issue for them, because when you think about it, the gameplay of, say, Battlefield 1 is going to be so different from what they are trying to produce here. I mean, my first shooter I think I ever played was Medal of Honor Allied Assault, and that's what I'm expecting from this game, which is different from Battlefield 1. I think it's just they need to make sure that they're communicating that they're not going to be A, on the same scale, or B, they're not going to feel like similar experiences, because that's what's really going to knock them kind of out of the park if people think that that's what's coming.
Yeah, that is exactly the sort of point I'm trying to get to here, but a really sort of haphanded way about it. But yeah, I can see the game standing incredibly well, doing incredibly well on its own merits. It was a super fun game. There was, everyone was kind of on a level playing field. There was nobody that had stupid perks to make them raise their guns quicker or fly further or have more ammo. Everyone was on the same level, and it was more about your skill as a first-person shooter player rather than how great a loadout you can create or how great a character you can create. And I think that's what's going to make the game really shine. But I think with, like, you've got like Infinite Warfare, I mean, was it Advanced Warfare was the first one that started making everyone fly around.
Yes.
And then Black Ops 3 that followed that one, and then Infinite Warfare that also followed that. So the first-person shooter experience has evolved from what it used to be, because all of these AAA games adding more and more bells and whistles onto, tacking them onto the game. And though it's going to be incredibly refreshing to have a game like this get released, I also think there's a lot of, the first-person shooter experience has evolved, and I guess it begs the question that is there a market for a core, back-to-basics, raw first-person shooter?
I would say the fact that CSGO is still as popular as it is an easy yes to that question.
Well, it depends. Like, are these appealing to different audiences, right? So this looks like it's trying to appeal to the audience that enjoyed the original modern military shooters when they first came out, like the original the original Call of Duties and such.
Yeah.
This doesn't seem like a super skill-based shooter. Like, I mean, that's not to say it doesn't take skill to play, modern military shooters, but, like, it doesn't seem like a Counter-Strike type of game. It seems more like a original Call of Duty type of game from what I'm seeing. I haven't heard anything about this game yet, so this is interesting to see. I also don't know if Squeenix has ever published a PS before. Have they?
No, but this is Square Enix Collective.
Okay.
Which is, it is very confusing. I've tried to kind of look into it, but I think Square Enix Collective are a sort of off branch of Square Enix that kind of takes chances on, like smaller indie games. And if it becomes a success, that's when Square Enix kind of come in and then, throw their money at it. I mean, I think they also published Bulkhead's last game, if I'm not mistaken.
Huh.
Which is the Turing Test. I think they also published that.
Which you were mentioning earlier, and Dale was mentioning he was playing earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a struggle. not intellectually, might I add. It didn't flow particularly well. It was quite difficult to play.
Yeah, I think as well that that might be something that if people kind of pay attention to might not do so well for them, because what they did is they announced Battalion 1944. They announced the Kickstarter for Battalion 1944, and then they had a successful Kickstarter, and then they're like, oh, we've got this new game, the Turing Test. And it kind of, for me anyway, I was kind of like, okay, so what?
Yeah.
One
of the interesting things I think about this is that it's launching for PS4 and Xbox One, and I understand they're building it in Unreal Engine 4, so it kind of nothing below that would really support it. But the people who I think would be interested in buying this game, or who'd be interested in playing it, aren't people who have maybe the most up-to-date console. It's people like my dad who have an Xbox 360 that's been passed back once I've been finished with it. He's the original kind of the person who was playing these games when they first came out. I think they're going to lose. That's a lot of the market that would be interested in this game that they're not going to touch because they won't be spending £400, £300 on the most up-to-date consoles.
Is the game getting a physical release?
Not that we're aware of yet. I don't think they've spoken about the release.
Okay.
Models.
Because I can see if it's going digital only, that would make sense that it's not going to those old consoles. Just because, I mean, if Microsoft and Sony aren't going to support those consoles for much longer, there's no point putting a digital game out on them right now. Because those people still are going to lose those games.
I guess the games are still coming out for like. The last game came out for the PS2 like 2 years ago, right?
So I think FIFA 14 was the last PS2.
Yeah, game. I wouldn't be surprised then if.
But again, that had a physical release, and the PS2 sold, 160 million units,
or 100. Yeah, million exactly. Units. So it would make sense why they would be pushing that instead. Right. Maybe
plus third world countries still have PS2s that are knocking boots all over the place. I wouldn't see it coming to Xbox 360 or PS3, but I understand where you're coming from with that sentiment. But I think there's definitely a market there for these old school games.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, it wouldn't make business sense to bring them to those consoles. But then at the same time, are they going to have the audience for these games on the consoles that kind of people are playing now?
I think so.
I think probably not as much as if they broadened it out. But I don't know. Maybe it's not something there. Like you say, it would take a lot of work.
But if this game launches at like $30 digitally on, the PlayStation Store, the Xbox Live Store, then I think people are more inclined to pick up a $30 game that they don't know about than a $60 game they don't know about.
Yeah, it's a good point.
So, I mean, I don't think it'll struggle, but I don't think, comparing it is fair to compare it to an EA title or an Activision title that just like, well, we have, $20 million to develop a game. So, sorry, your Kickstarter game sucks, but. Here you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of like Verdun, which was a World War One game, and the instant Battlefield One was announced, comparisons were immediately drawn between the two.
Yeah,
but
which is not.
I didn't see people shitposting about like, X Games better, or Verdun's better, Battlefield One's better, because they understood that like the difference in scope. So, I think people have at least manageable way of tempering their expectations.
Right.
So.
But some of those smaller titles have tighter gameplay because they have less features to go around. So they have a core experience that people are looking for. So they don't have to worry about 10 different things when they open up a new game or when they start their game, how they're going to set their loadouts, what perks they're going to go, what loot boxes they're opening before they start a game. So, I mean, a simpler experience is, refreshing to the market right now.
Yeah, I jumped into Infinite Warfare again earlier today, and the sheer level of, I wouldn't even say customization, the sheer level of shit you have to go through to customize a class or to even get anywhere before a game is impossible. The time between one game and another is what, about 30 seconds? Mm-hmm. And you, Infinite Warfare, you've got your creator class, you've got your quartermaster now that you can unlock loot boxes, but then you can also use weapon parts or material or something to then mod a weapon to a different type of different variant of the weapon that you currently have, as well as also unlocking new weapons, unlocking new attachments and stuff, and then customizing each of those attachments. And I was just looking at it and I was like, what the fuck am I supposed to, like,
right,
where do I start?
It's overwhelming. Just throw me into a lobby with a gun and then start the game.
Yeah,
like the
build that I played for Battalion, it was literally the game started, you were given a choice. There was a choice of, I think, about six weapons, but only two of them were available during the demo. And that was it. You were in the game. There was no choice of whether you wanted to go for a flashbang or a grenade. You literally just had a grenade. There was no choice whether you had it or not. Mm-hmm. And it was just incredibly refreshing to just choose a gun and go at it. And the gameplay was super tight. It was actually quite impressive for such an early build. It was incredibly fun to play. The level dynamics were incredibly easy to pick up, and immediately after about 30 seconds, I already knew the map, and I knew the direction that I wanted to go, the rough areas of where I'd find the enemy. And I picked up a lot from the game incredibly quickly, and that I found thoroughly enjoying and incredibly refreshing as well. But I think another area where it might I don't want to say fail, but it's they're planning on throwing it into early access in May. And as I've previously wrote on the site as well, early access for some can be a kind of death wish or death sentence, because again, I'm trying to word it so I'm not insulting all of our audience, but sometimes gamers can be very unforgiving when something isn't how they expect.
Right.
And for it to launch into early access, I mean, Roller Coaster Tycoon is just one huge example that I can give, that as soon as they released a video for it, everyone was just hating on it, and that was it. It was just destined to fail. And I'm just hoping that it's not the same situation for this one as well.
Interesting, so it's releasing in May. Like, May is soon, and you were saying the gameplay is down, but it doesn't look like it's ready. How do you feel like it's
early
ready?
Access? Early Sorry? Access is the key point there.
Mm. Yeah, so you think they're gonna? You mean launch a similar build to the one they showed at Res?
I can't. That's not something that I can answer. I would, in my personal opinion, hope not, because it felt like I was playing like Call of Duty 3.
Damn.
It looked like I was playing Call of Duty 3. It had the sim. It was very sort of. It needed work, and they knew it needed work, and they made it clear that, you know, these aren't the final visuals. But if it was to launch, if that build was to launch into early access, I'm not sure people would
stick around so well. You know?
No. I mean, again, like in the post that I wrote about early access, the culling, that looks great, that plays great, but because it launched into early access, it had an initial boom of people wanting to play this game, which I think Battalion will have as well. It will have, you know, 10, 15, 20, tens of thousands of people playing, maybe even 100,000 of people playing this game when it launches into early access. But unless Bulkhead are able to offer something substantial to keep people coming back to the game, to have people see that the game's on in early access, or, you know, kind of after it launches, soon after it launches, you know, maybe if it's in early access for 2 or 3 months rather than like years, like DayZ or something like that, then I don't know. I'm not sure it will get the reception that it deserves.
Fair.
Right.
But this is all just my thinking. I mean, I'm incredibly sort of passionate for that game. I really want it to do well. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm still really looking forward to it. And they're just my concerns, and I really hope it doesn't go down that route. I hope it launches into early access. Everyone loves it. They launch it out of early access within a couple of months, jumps onto console, still looks great, taking all the, you know, all of the thoughts of players on board.
There's no such thing as an early access game that's fully released after a couple months. No way.
Well, wasn't it Dirt Rally? I don't think that was in early access for too
long. There's been a couple like AAA games. There was like Just Cause 3 technically had an early access launch or something like that, but that's kind of irrelevant because that means that they literally just are, you know, releasing the game and then basically having a final patch over it. But they want to clarify that that's not, you know, that's why there's bugs still.
Well,
but yeah. there's a very big difference.
Didn't Mass Effect just launch an early access?
Well, I guess one example is Dirt Rally. I mean, that launched on early access in April 2015, then it fully launched on PC in December 2015, with a Xbox and PlayStation 4 release in April 2016. So it's possible, but obviously that's Codemasters and Bulkhead aren't Codemasters, but it just depends how much Square Enix Collective are willing to put into helping them along with that, if any. But yeah, that's just my thought.
Cool. I know Gage has his topic. Did anybody else have something they want to hit first? Because I don't know if anybody else has anything for sure.
I had a topic. I wanted to talk about kind of missing out on game series and going back to them. So for those of you that don't know, I have been playing Breath of the Wild. I actually finished it last night, and I say finished very loosely because there's still so much to do in it. But it was an amazing game. It was really, really good. And I can see what all the hype was about. I can see why people loved it so much. I really, really had a good time with it. But this has been my first Zelda game. I've never played any before. I've never had, I've never really had a Nintendo console. Kind of my first Nintendo console, I think, was the Wii. And then I skipped the Wii U and now I've got a Switch. So I haven't had the opportunity to play a lot of the previous Zelda games. I've never really played a Mario game. I think I had one about seven golden coins or something back in the day on my Game Boy Color. I mean, we're talking years and years ago now. And I just wondered whether, I mean, those I've enjoyed Breath of the Wild so much. I kind of want to go back and play some of these old Zelda games, but are they trapped? Has anyone else ever missed out on a game series like this and gone back and played the older games? I just wanted to see what people's thoughts were, what kind of they've done in the past, if this has ever happened to them.
The closest I've got is around the time Dark Souls 3 launched. I was like, man, I haven't touched any of these Souls games, and I know that there's something I would like. So yeah. Right when Dark Souls 3 launched, I started Dark Souls 1, and I played all of them. I went through Dark Souls 1, Dark Souls 2, Dark Souls 3, Bloodborne, Demon Souls, and I played all of them, beat them, and loved them. And like, now I'm all caught up right when The Ring City came out. And so like within the course of a year, I played every like bit of Souls that there is. And it was a great experience. But, you know, I kind of, part of the fun of those games, especially with me who like knows so much about like the lore and whatnot, was everyone figures it out as it's going like organically and trying having discussions about it. But by the time I hopped in, all that was over and everybody already kind of knew what was going on. So yeah, you miss out on like the liveliness of the community. The older games didn't have any online activity. So it's kind of sad. That's sort of the issue with a lot of more modern games when you hit them later.
Yeah, but where did you play them? I mean,
I played them all on PC, except for Bloodborne, right. Of course.
Right, okay. All right, that makes sense. See, my issue, part of the issue I have is that, I mean, half of the games that I would like to go back and play, they're all trapped on consoles that either are hard to get now, or, I mean, I don't really want to dish out money just to play, to buy the console and then buy the game as well. So it's kind of like double-edged sword in that they're all trapped, and I don't know whether it's worth going back and kind of diving into that.
I mean, like, the vast majority of Zelda games, specifically, you can at least emulate. One of the interesting things that is if somebody was interested in, you know, like spending all the money and getting the consoles for it, is that with the 3DS and the Wii U, you can play every Zelda game in existence, actually, because they're all on Virtual Console with those two devices. But, of course, that involves getting a Wii U, exactly.
The games you want to play on 3DS anyway, unless you're really interested in Wind Waker. But Wind Waker's good, so I would recommend that too. But 3DS is the way to go. As far as missing series, like this is a question I've asked a lot, you know, throughout my years of doing this. I've never played a Final Fantasy game, and every time I talk to other video gamers, they mention Final Fantasy as being a big part of, you know, getting into video games for them, and I've never touched one of those games. So I've always asked, am I missing out on a general gaming experience by never touching a Final Fantasy game? But I have no desire to go back to play any of those old games. I didn't even care to pick up 15 or Final Fantasy 14 to play that online with anybody, but I don't know that I'm missing out necessarily.
Yeah. To be fair, some of those games have not aged well.
And that's the thing. Looking at 7, the original launch of 7, I'm like, I'm not going back and playing that.
Yeah.
I have no desire to play this game.
Yeah, not a popular opinion, but one of my favorite Final Fantasy games was Final Fantasy X. And I got the HD remastered version not long ago and played that, and I played it all the way to the end kind of out of a sense of duty that I felt like I should finish it, but even the gameplay in that doesn't grab you like some of the more modern Final Fantasies do.
Gotcha.
The only one I played was like 12, and not even that far into it. I got maybe like halfway, and it was just dense, so I couldn't bring myself to finish it.
I find that of a lot of Final Fantasy games that like you really need to commit.
Yes.
But I'm kind of with you with Final Fantasy. I mean, 7's the only one I really paid attention to because back in, I think, high school, possibly, everyone was playing it.
Right.
And I haven't played a lot of it, I was there for a lot of people's experiences with that particular game. I was kind of hanging around with them at the time while they were playing it and while we were just like chilling and stuff. So I feel like I have played it, but I haven't actually played it.
I guess I get that too. I know enough of the characters to like, oh, those are Final Fantasy characters. Couldn't tell you anything about the game, but I know who Cloud is. I know Tifa.
Yeah.
But no, I haven't really felt that I was missing out. One thing I kind of did feel was not necessarily an issue, but that something that concerned me was how game series that have a lot of sequels, how the later sequels are kind of letting people miss out on them, or kind of segregating people or gamers from, you know, kind of enjoying it. And like you said, a lot of things that are locked on past consoles in sort of layman's terms. So yeah, I haven't experienced that firsthand. Like, it's not something that, you know, if I miss out on something, or if I want to play like Mass Effect Andromeda, I don't think I'd want to go back and play the other Mass Effect games, and like Dead Space, things like that. If I wanted to play like the later one, I'd probably try and play the later one if I didn't feel like I was missing out on too much of the story.
Yeah,
but I don't know. It's definitely interesting, but it's not something that.
So my first problem with this, my first problem with everything that's coming out of your mouth, is you saying, "Oh, I don't feel like I'm missing out much," and you've never played a Zelda game.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't feel like I'm missing out on anything.
You fucker.
I don't wake up in the morning and think, oh, fuck, if only I play Zelda.
Because you haven't played it, my dog.
True, my dude. I don't feel the urge to do that. Like, Breath of the Wild was appealing for the first week of launch, and now I'm just like, yeah.
I've talked to so many of my friends and stuff like that about it, and there's... Yeah, I don't know how else to really put it. Like, it's what's really weird about it is that I like this is something especially interested with Dale saying that it's the first game he's played of the series, is that it is so unlike every other Zelda game, but at the same time, it is the most Zelda game. Like, the way I would just describe it is the original game was all about just the feeling of being like lost and alone in this world and not knowing how to progress and, like, you know, just discovering it all for yourself. It's that feeling of exploration and adventure. And that's something that Breath of the Wild taps into innately. And, like, even my uncle, who's, like, 30, and he's, like, super jaded with all games, he was over for a bit. And I was like, you wanna try out Zelda? So he sat down with the game, and he played it. And after, like, a half hour, like, he was just smiling and laughing. Like, he had a great time. And it was really funny, actually. Also, Gage, I'm getting a little echo from you.
That's pretty interesting. I think... on Zelda...
Yeah, mad echo, Gage.
My bad.
Okay, but at the same time, I've been hearing a lot of people, especially sort of, I guess people my age, complaining that Breath of the Wild doesn't seem like a Zelda game at all. Because the typical formula of how those games work is you kind of have this world that you go around in, and you explore the world, and you solve some sort of plot until you make it to an area, to like a village, you talk to people, and then you go into a dungeon, you solve puzzles, beat a boss, get an item. It's very formulaic. The series has been, like, Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask, Wind Waker, Twilight Princess, Skyward Sword, extremely formulaic games. And they completely threw that formula away for this game and just went sort of back to the heart of it. So I've heard so many people, like, not sure what to make of it. And it's like, in a way, after going and just playing, like, just this one game, if you were to go back and play some of the others, it would feel like a completely different series.
Yeah.
But in a way, yeah. it's true to the soul, which is weird. It's a very weird distinction.
Yeah, one of the reasons I kind of want to go back is that I said this at the beginning, I really, really enjoyed my time with Breath of the Wild, but I don't think, this is going to upset some people, but for me, I enjoyed Horizon more than I enjoyed Breath of the Wild. And I think what would have knocked it above Horizon for me and knocked it into that kind of 10 category that everyone who's played it is saying it's in, is if I had played the older games and I had that sense of nostalgia, had that sense of going back and kind of seeing something old, new again. And I would like to experience that. It's one of the reasons I want to go back, because I don't kind of give it, in my head, it's not a 10 out of 10 game.
I think that fits a lot to it too. As well as the fact that it is more puzzle based. Of course, it's not just about exploration. It's about the way that you tackle it, and the way that you tackle it, and the way that you solve these puzzles and stuff builds off of a lot of the concepts and thoughts from past games. So yeah. I think you're kind of right on that. Not necessarily, I would say, nostalgia, but even just sort of the experience and the know-how. Like, it connects a lot to the relations of stuff. Like, a lot of, like, the random things you're able to do using items and you know, like all the different logic things. Like, oh, if I hold my torch on fire, then I can melt this ice, and like all these weird little interactions. That's stuff that is built off of in the previous games that a lot of AAA games just don't do. Like,
yeah,
like in one of the old games from 1998, there's one of those targets you got to shoot with a bow, but it's in some ice, and you don't have any like way of burning it. But there's a torch, so you can shoot your arrow through that and melt it, and that it really tests your logic. And Breath of the Wild is kind of like the epitome of that, where you're applying just logic to everything, and in addition to all the combat and exploration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was my favorite bit of the game. The kind of the way that everything, there's no one way of doing things. I mean, there's just so many different ways to do it, everything, because everything behaves exactly how it should behave if it was in the real world. It's that part of the game.
Yes, Split gets it. But yeah, yeah, like if you were interested in checking out some of the older games, like I would probably recommend, as weird as it is, like if you're not averse to like older games, trying something like Link's Awakening, because that would connect a bit more to the experience of Breath of the Wild, because the other games would feel a lot different. Either that or just Ocarina of Time, because that's like the classic that everyone will jerk off.
I'll give them a go.
Yeah. Like I've had a lot of conversations with people about it too, and like Ocarina, like, for somebody who played like all the other games after, like Wind Waker, Twilight Princess, all this stuff, and then played Ocarina afterward, they're like, oh, I didn't realize it, but this is like a blueprint that they basically made Ocarina and then just followed this blueprint for every other game. And that's why they all kind of like as far as like the way you progress, not necessarily the things you do, but the manner in which the story flows very much fits that blueprint. And in this game, it was just chucked in the fucking trash. Which is like a good thing, as weird as that sounds. Like just body dunk skis. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, that's sort of like the history of Zelda. Anybody else got anything, or is it time for Gage to go off now?
Brady, nothing.
I don't really have a topic, so you can feel free to go off.
Okay.
He's got this.
So I want to talk about the Project Scorpio. We're all video game guys. We kind of understand how stuff works.
Project Scorpio.
Yeah, it's this new thing.
If only there was a YouTube video I could watch to fully understand everything that's going on with the Scorpio.
Exactly.
If only.
So
this is a Microsoft thing. Okay.
Just to catch everyone up, if you don't know, they showed off specs for this thing and, you know, ran all these tests with Digital Foundry, which let me ask you, do you think it was a good idea for Microsoft to go to Digital Foundry with the Scorpio first?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea.
Because they were harshly critical of the original Xbox.
I'm in agreement. I think so as well. Because when you
it definitely showed faith that Microsoft have in Scorpio.
Right.
Yeah, it shows a level of confidence that I've not seen them. Well, they've not had reason to have it before, to be fair.
Exactly.
So it shows a level of confidence. Yeah,
they're taking like their new project to the guys who dig apart these things to see exactly what they can do. So that was a good first step. The specs on it look good. The question becomes: is Scorpio going to be the thing that gets Microsoft back into the console war here? Because I mean, right now they're being outsold by Sony 2-1 console wise, and that's not a good thing for Microsoft at least. So with the Scorpio, does it make sense that this is just another Xbox One for the market, or that this could be a totally new console? Because I'm holding out that this might even just be a new console that's not an Xbox One, which might sound crazy, and. What does Microsoft need to do to go on to get back into this race with Sony?
I know what you're saying about it being a new sort of generation, but I don't think that will happen. What I think this is Microsoft's attempt at injecting life into the Xbox One. They're saying, we have this Xbox One console that is the best home console on the market at the moment in terms of performance and graphic capabilities.
But is that enough for people to buy the Xbox One again? Because they're not buying it now. I mean, they're buying enough, but they're not buying Sony numbers. Is 4K enough for people to go like, okay, well, you're right. I don't need games to play on Xbox One. I'll just come play what you got now and lose out on exclusives.
I don't think it's enough for people to ditch their PlayStation 4s.
Sure.
Because, or, well, unless they're thinking of going for the Pro, and then obviously it's kind of a no-brainer because if they've got a PlayStation 4 already, they're not just going to ditch all of the games that they've got to get an Xbox One. But for someone that's kind of looking for the best of the best on the market, the Scorpio could definitely be a contender, and it might even pull some people over to have it as a second console.
All right, so here's the first thing I always say. And this is something I told like all my friends in high school and everything, and I think most people, whether they realize it or not, subconsciously agree about. The mass consumer doesn't care that much about like individual games. They care about playing with their friends. So what that does right there is everyone always wants to buy the console that their friend has. So it's like, I know even when the Xbox One came out, Destiny was coming out, all that stuff, I only had one friend who bought Destiny on a next-gen console because everyone bought it on the 360 so they could all play together. And that same thing kept happening with every game that launched on both new and old gen for like 2 years. People purposely like did not buy the new stuff. So if Scorpio is not going to be like a new console, but it's just going to be like a refined version of the Xbox One, then they're like, oh, sure, you could feel free and get that, but like, I'm just going to stick with my Xbox One because then I can still play games with you. And
I mean, I agree.
I just sneezed. Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so two things. First of all, just to be clear, since I'm behind the news on Project Scorpio, this is supposed to be just like an upgraded Xbox One console, correct? Like a PS4 Pro type of thing?
That's the way the marketing's been leaning, but like I think it's still subjective because I'm still not convinced that it might just be an Xbox One.
Yeah.
So it's not confirmed.
Very little is confirmed other than the fact that it's really strong.
Yeah.
Okay. So if it is like that, then yeah, I don't see that being a successful business route for them. I don't know. And piece of anecdotal evidence about what Dylan was saying. Yeah, my friends, it started as one of them buying a PS4 to play Destiny on a next-gen console, and then everybody in the friend group bought a PS4, and nobody even like batted an eye at the Xbox One. Because there was no point to if everybody had a different console. So I absolutely agree with they will buy what their friends are playing.
Right.
Yeah. The only way they're going to pull people away from kind of Sony and the PlayStation 4 is if this is a new console. And I think you're right. The way they're marketing at the minute, it's leaving it open. They're kind of saying it. I think a few months ago, actually, they were saying it wasn't a new console. But now they've kind of backtracked a bit from that, and their wording's a little less strong, and they're kind of implying that it's kind of what you make of it, which isn't probably the best strategy for them. I think they need to come out one way or the other,
right,
and say what this is.
Well, I mean, they started off with that whole, you know, it's going to join the Xbox One family of consoles, which includes the Xbox One and Xbox One S, and then but now it's at the point where, well, the Project Scorpio is forward compatible with all your Xbox 360 backwards compatible games and your Xbox One games, so it sounds like it's going to play those games, but it also sounds like they could be holding out for new Scorpio exclusive games, which I think would be the route to go to get people to jump ship, because the PS4 Pro is not selling. People are just, you know, if they want a PlayStation 4, they're like, well, I don't need 4K. I don't even have a 4K TV.
Yeah. At this stage, no. Right. I don't see how anybody rushed out to the shops and was like, yeah, I need this console.
You need good exclusives. Exclusives kind of sell consoles.
That's also my point.
But the thing is,
I think that the Scorpio might have games that you can't play on a normal Xbox One, kind of like if the new 3DS had games you couldn't play on it.
Yeah, that's
There
were like two of those. There was Xenoblade Chronicles and Binding of Isaac on the eShop, as far as I know. So
the hardware is different. So obviously, naturally, you'd have to develop differently, right? Or just like with the hardware in mind and how advanced this thing is for a console. I was looking at some of the specs.
I think they've come out and said categorically that any game released for the Scorpio will be playable on the Xbox One. So it's the Scorpio itself which will upscale Xbox One games, and obviously devs can make adjustments for that within the game, but they've said that any Scorpio game will be playable on the Xbox One. So that's a tricky kind of
sorry, they can do that because they're running on the x86 infrastructure, which can just, it's easily portable back and forth between the two.
Right.
But
I think there's a possibility that they will, not immediately, but maybe later down the line, that they will release games that have Scorpio specific features or features. extra capabilities, whether it's graphically, gameplay, or whatever, what have you, that won't change the game dramatically for people that are still on Xbox One, but will be beneficial for those that have committed to the Scorpio.
Yeah, and I think another thing that's interesting, and I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but from what I understand, the PS4 Pro only kind of upscales the games that are kind of that play better on it, if you like, or look better on it, on a 4K TV. But Microsoft have said that the Scorpio will, you'll see an improvement if you just have a HDR TV. You don't need a 4K kind of TV to make to take advantage of the benefits that Scorpio is going to offer.
Yeah, that was a statement that Phil Spencer made right after E3 when people were concerned, like, oh, do I need a 4K TV for the Scorpio? And he said, no.
You can still play it. They echoed again recently, didn't they? They were saying that on a 1080p, it would still be incredible.
Yeah, the infrastructure for the console is going to make your games look better that are already out there. And then, of course, there's rumors the game's going to be patched to look that way, that, you know, it's developers have developing for Scorpio, but, you know, they'll still look better. There's a lot behind it, but I don't know that fidelity is enough to get people to buy this thing.
True. I think, I've always had an Xbox. I'm kind of Microsoft through and through. Now I have a PlayStation 4 and a Switch because there are games that I want to play for those that aren't coming out for the Xbox One. And it's like you said, exclusives are going to, in the end of the day, they're going to sell the hardware. But I really want Microsoft to come out fighting on this. They're at the minute, you're right, they're being sold kind of 2-1 by the PS4. They can do better than this. I know they can. And I'd be really surprised if, I mean, they're a huge business. They must know what they need to do. And I think the Scorpio is a step in the right direction, but they also have to bring, they have to bring the exclusives to the table. They have to kind of care about the community a bit more, which I think you're starting to see with the changes that are coming to the kind of the dashboard, the I forgot the name of it, but the new kind of Netflix style offering they've got. What's it called?
Game Pass.
Isn't that Beam?
Is it Game? Yeah, no, it's Game Pass.
Beam is the streaming service.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, so I think that they need to make kind of more of what they're doing at the same time as pushing the Scorpio and bringing on exclusives, because if they do that, then they're going to come back into it. But at the minute, the only people who are going to continue playing on Xbox are the people who
already have one,
who already have one. Yeah, they're not going to pull in new customers.
Another thing that Gage, that you mentioned in like your Scorpio video, is that they're marketing it as like a premium console, so it'll probably cost quite a bit. And as we know, if somebody can already play the same games like on Xbox One and their friends already have that and there's no reason, the mass market probably won't invest. And like the tech savvy people probably will, because then, oh man, my games look so nice and run so sweet. Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, that's why I'm hoping, like, it is a new console, so people can be like, okay, I can get rid of my Xbox I have now. I'll go trade it into the local game store, but I can keep all of my games, you know, and then I'll just go upgrade to the Scorpio, and then I'll have all my games still. My friends are in the same network as me, and we'll be good to go.
But I don't know. But that actually makes quite a bit of sense, because then you, like, the delineation between what is a new console and what is not is sort of shattered at that point, because then it's not about like backwards compatibility. It's about like the same architecture.
Right.
I have sort of like,
what's that?
Sort of going back, sort of, well, a little far back to your topic, Dylan, about Microsoft shifting less from consoles, more onto PC, and what the Scorpio could allow, which is something that people have been asking Microsoft for a long time since they released the Xbox to PC streaming, is PC to Xbox streaming. And with the creator update that's slowly being rolled out, that has the game mode, everything kind of, if you think about it, is adding up to Microsoft bringing all of their gaming stuff onto one singular platform, whether it's Xbox, whether it's PC. And the Scorpio could be a platform to bring PC gaming onto Xbox One.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the Scorpio specs, it's essentially a mid-range PC. It's looking at the numbers, it's impressive. I wouldn't be surprised if you kind of see them going even further on what they've already started doing, kind of pulling together the PC and Xbox world, and it would be really impressive and good for the Xbox, I think, if that happened.
Yeah, I mean, they've got their Play Anywhere, and they're saying that every first-party game that releases on Xbox One will also be Play Anywhere for PC as well. It wouldn't surprise me if we then start getting PC-specific titles that are also Play Anywhere that launch on Xbox One as well. I mean, we've just got...
it's a big mistake that on the Windows 10 store, like, you could buy Quantum Break and you can also buy it on Xbox, but it's not the same copy. Like, if I could buy Quantum Break or something, play it on my Scorpio and play it on my PC, that'd be pretty sick.
Yeah,
but isn't that already the case? Can you not already do that?
Yeah, with now
you can send it. You can have your Xbox like in the same room streaming it to your PC, but there's a Windows 10 store copy of it, which is separate from the copy on Xbox. It's their architecture in the back end for how they delineate Windows 10 games and Xbox games is super confusing, dude. Trust me, I spent hours looking into this, and it doesn't make any sense.
But with cloud saving, you just play the same save, though, right?
Not when it's not if you buy the Windows 10 version. It's not the same as the Xbox version. It's
what,
not.
So if it's you buy the Windows 10 version first and then go onto the Xbox with...
You have to buy it again.
No.
No?
Yeah.
Not
no.
Really.
No. I think you're wrong.
you can buy Quantum Break on PC and you can get the Xbox version for free.
You have to buy the Xbox version on PC. You could buy the PC version on PC, though. There are two different versions that you can buy on PC.
If you buy the Windows version on PC...
Yes.
You get the Xbox version.
No.
Are you sure?
I'm yes. sure.
Is somebody backtracking right now?
Quantum Break is a Play Anywhere title, as far as I was aware, which means you buy it on either platform and you get it on the other. It's essentially
you can but if you buy it on Xbox, then you can like stream it from Xbox to your PC, though. But it's not.
Well,
the
you don't
same.
Stream it. You can just play it.
Yeah, you get a copy of the game.
No way, dude.
Yeah,
I think you have.
Yeah,
it
that's what I thought.
I'm looking at Xbox Play Anywhere. Experience the freedom to play your games wherever. Buy once, play anywhere. Purchase an Xbox Play Anywhere digital game and play on both Xbox One and Windows PC at no additional cost. Pick up where you left off on Xbox One or Windows 10 PC. Bring all of your save game add-ons and achievements with you. Halo Wars, Gears of War 4, Forza Horizon 3, Recall, Killer Instinct, Everspace, Resident Evil, Fallout Shelter. Oh, wait, no, you're right. Quantum Break isn't one of these, apparently.
So this is a thing, but yeah, there's
just,
like a lot of...
Wrong. Play Anywhere title.
Fair, but this is what, if they did this with every like game on the Scorpio, then that would be pretty cool, but this is something that they started rolling out. They started rolling this out like very recently, though, but when I was reading into all this, I was like, this system's super confusing. Yeah, with Quantum Break specifically, I know because I was looking at that title, you can buy it on PC.
I remember now. Yeah. It was the very beginning of Play Anywhere, where if you bought the Xbox version, you got a free code for the Windows 10 version, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. Ah, yeah, that's it. Yeah,
it's super confusing. But yeah, if you fucked up, you could technically buy two copies of the same game.
Yeah,
but it goes back to what we were saying. There's a Scorpio which needs to be a success. They need to bring on exclusives, but then there's this whole host of other things that they need to do to bring their community with them to this new console. And this is one of the things I think that they have to tidy up and they have to do better at to get.
Well, I think they're doing it better now. I think Quantum Break came around the time when this was going to be a thing.
So yeah,
I think that's just kind of a an outlier.
Another thing is that, keep in mind, the very fact that we were confused about this proves that it's a confusing-ass architecture.
No,
well, that's exactly what I mean.
Well, I think Quantum Break being the one...
It was Quantum Break.
As I said, Quantum Break's the outlier where it was the only case of this happening. Because right now, with Play Anywhere, it's easy. You just buy one copy and you get both.
Yeah.
But isn't the problem that... Well, I mean, for me, I thought everything was just available. Like, I know a lot about the games industry. I know a lot about games. I shouldn't still have that confusion, especially as a big fan of Microsoft. That there's more they need to do to talk about exactly what they're offering.
Sure, I mean, no one's perfect.
Yeah, I think what they've basically said, the sort of crux of it is, from now on, any first party titles will be Play Anywhere, but the third party ones they have to essentially be announced as Play Anywhere. So
like Resident Evil 7.
like Resident Evil 7, for example, and Shadow of War, that's going to be crossplay on Xbox, Scorpio, and PC. I say crossplay because that's just a better way of saying it than play anywhere. But I think what the one thing that would have me wanting to buy a Scorpio is if they announced PC to Xbox streaming.
Okay, because... but here, you know, here's what I'm thinking is if every first party title will be able, like, play anywhere or whatnot, where's Halo? Because they haven't done Halo 5 did not launch as one of those. And then if they did that, I have a sick PC. There's literally no reason for me to buy the Scorpio.
See, well, two things to that. Halo 5 came out before that announcement of Play Anywhere.
Yeah.
The second part of that, I agree that if you're doing this Play Anywhere title, it's kind of like telling people, well, they don't need to buy an Xbox One. They could just play those,
that literally
those
gets first party games
that are exclusive
purpose.
To Xbox One on their PC if they want to use the Windows Store. You know, like it gets rid of the reason to have an Xbox One. So I don't think that's the best idea, but I know I do appreciate them supporting the gamers out there, the supporting the gaming community, but it doesn't really support the Xbox One.
Yeah, no, that's. But then this kind of goes back.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah, it goes back to Dylan's article about Microsoft focusing more on making their sort of gaming efforts a more sort of PC thing.
Yeah, so, that's confusing as fuck.
Can we talk about Shadow of Mordor real quick, where they said that it's going to be the first Project Scorpio game? Does that give you any indication that this might be the new console? Trying to get this thing across that this could be a new console.
It's also listed in that Xbox Play Anywhere games coming soon.
Right. That was what
meaning that said. Apparently you could buy on Windows 10, play it on Windows 10, and Xbox One and Scorpio.
Yeah.
Yes. That
doesn't mean anything.
If this is a new console generation, I don't know whether it'll work for Microsoft. I really don't, because. What was it, 8 years from the 360 to the One and the PlayStation 3 to the PlayStation 4?
Yeah, but we're not going to see another 8-year cycle. There is a market crash in the middle of those two, in the middle of that console cycle that, you know, held off on people putting out new consoles. That's a different situation, to my opinion.
I don't know whether I could, for me personally, whether it's something that I would be willing to commit to this soon.
A new generation completely? You wouldn't jump at that? I think we're going to get a PlayStation 5 announcement before you know it.
No way. Gosh,
please no.
I absolutely
no
think
no
so.
Way.
PlayStation 4 launched 2013. We're coming up on 2018. I think you're going to get a PlayStation 5 more than faster than you think.
I think the 8-year cycle worked, though, because if you look at early Xbox 360 games to later Xbox 360 games, there was a development curve where people kind of managed to get the most out of these consoles. And for it to be just, what is it, 4 or 5 years now? For that, I don't think there's been enough time. I don't know.
The way the industry is moving, it's very fast. I think 5 years is fine. 4 years is fine.
No.
With the explosion of like 4K and everybody jumping that way, I think the time's now. I think we can see a PlayStation 5 as soon as the end of 2018.
I've had a 1080p TV for three years. I'm so late and so behind. I can't. If it's all 4K, no, please just go home.
I'm just saying.
See this, Aaron, is why you get a PC.
I have a PC.
PC, yeah, and you don't play on it,
and you don't even use it, though. See, this is... This I don't even... Bruh.
He's got that Play Anywhere stuff.
Yeah.
See, this is exactly why I don't deal with any of that unless it's Nintendo.
I don't want to sit at a desk.
Then you connect your PC to a TV and you get a wireless keyboard and mouse and you sit on your couch.
Because that's so comfortable when you're trying to play like a first-person shooter. If I was to fully commit to PC gaming, like, I would have to change the way that I play. I don't want a keyboard and mouse for like Call of Duty or Overwatch and things like that. I don't. And then
that's why the Xbox One is plug and play.
Yes, but then you're at a disadvantage.
I mean, if you suck.
Yeah, it's just a kid good.
Yeah, dude.
You gotta use this Xbox One Elite controller.
A mouse, I'm gonna have to put it with auto aim. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
No. Yeah. I actually wonder if they do like make any concessions like in the way it works when you're using an Xbox controller playing like COD or something on PC. I have no clue. They do? Holy shit, that's funny.
Rainbow
that's funny.
Six Siege I played that both PC and Xbox One, and the PC version gives you an option to connect a controller and to stick auto aim on.
Wow.
But you're
can, still... I get, like, can I get my mouse to register as an Xbox controller just so I get auto aim on my mouse?
I don't think it'd matter.
It'd be funny though. Also, I just realized Dale died. What the fuck?
Oh, is he not in here anymore? Rest in peace.
Yeah.
No, really.
Well, I'll ask you anyway, Aaron. You're an Xbox guy.
Mm-hmm.
Are you excited for Project Scorpio?
I'm excited for the prospect.
To see what it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
If it's a new console that's aimed at like 4K and better graphics and things like that, maybe it's something I'll get in a couple of years' time. If it's a new console generation, probably the same, but I won't be rushing to the shop.
Okay.
Alright, and also I got a topic that I just saw on Twitter.
Okay.
Oh god. All right,
this is gonna be fun.
Wait, don't you just follow meme accounts?
I follow 800 accounts, dude. I follow a lot of news.
I'm up to date.
And then I was like, no, this is just, I don't care about these people, and whittled it down to about 300-400.
All right, but I'm going to hit you with this, all right? This is the headline that I saw. PewDiePie to start streaming on Twitch. Discuss.
Is he not already?
Nope, he does not.
So it's finally happened.
See, I've literally just remembered a topic of a news post that I, well, not a news post, a feature that I wanted to write, but I need to really work on it. And I think by the time I actually get to work on it, the whole topic will be sort of out. So let's take your PewDiePie, and I'll raise you my topic that I'd like to discuss with you now.
All right, hit me with it.
PewDiePie on Twitch, whatever, don't care. I'm not going to watch him, whatever. But you know all this shit that's been surrounding YouTube in terms of like advertisers, really paying attention now to the content that is on YouTube, and some are removing their ads, some are keeping them on, the controversies between YouTube and advertisers. The article that I wanted to write, but I wanted to word it decently enough, is if it wasn't for PewDiePie being a shit, none of this would be an issue. Like, things would be hunky-dory, but this advertiser crisis YouTube drama that's going on at the moment, if you think about it, is all because of PewDiePie and being in the mainstream media, being on these headlines because of the antics he was getting up to. It's just an interesting topic that if it wasn't for him, none of this would
happen. You know, I only 40% agree, right? Because, there was a lot of stuff that surrounded him that caused the YouTube advertising to be affected. But outside of that, YouTube was already heading in a direction to fuck themselves with advertisers. And he just kind of jumps or, basically put some... jump-started that whole, cycle of the downward spiral of advertising and YouTube and that relationship.
I'm not denying that there's an issue, but if it wasn't for him, the issue wouldn't be as
dramatic as it is right now.
For example,
it would have taken more time to develop into this huge issue, and nobody's getting money and YouTube's dumb and advertisers are pulling out and all that. But
Wombat, that's inaccurate for two reasons. One, Disney didn't do anything. They just own Maker Studios, and Maker Studios is the one who makes all the decisions. And two, it wasn't Maker Studios who actually flipped out. It was the Wall Street Journal. The Wall Street Journal's report in February highlighting that PewDiePie video is the one that started causing the commotion, and the publisher of his videos had to defend their stake and make a decision based off of their own financial well-being. And then in March, the Wall Street Journal again reported and released that stuff about the major brands, having ads on racist videos, which of course caused ads like Coca-Cola and Microsoft to pull out, which according to a lot of people I follow on Twitter is severely draining their revenue. So all the people who are making livings off of YouTube, their revenue is just falling. It's pretty dramatic.
Okay, so before, there's two points there. Coca-Cola have never pulled their advertising. I know you were just kind of using that as a general brand, but
I'm using that as a general.
Yeah. You know? But the other thing as well, this is the problem with, I'm not even going to say mainstream media, media in general. Wombat's obviously mentioning Disney there. And that's something that really annoyed me when this situation, when Maker Studios dropped PewDiePie, everyone was saying Disney drops PewDiePie, Disney does this, Disney does that. Disney just own Maker Studios. They might not have had such a huge influence on this subject. And this is one thing that really annoyed me, that all of these publications were saying that Disney did it. It was Disney's decision. Disney dropped PewDiePie. No, Maker Studios dropped PewDiePie. And this is why it's something I've always been kind of, it's something I think I spoke about in the last
yeah, I remember you talking
the last this podcast as well, is that I don't know, headlines now and online media now is getting far too loose with their tongues and the things that they're saying. They're being far too generalistic with things, and there's obviously this topic between fake news and things being reported incorrectly. And as people are trying to get more clicks and more revenue from this stuff, they're reporting false things. And it's nothing against Wombat. He's just, they are just repeating what they have read online from everybody that was saying that Disney did something, Disney did that. But no, it's Maker Studios. It was the same thing with SourceFed when that got cancelled. Everyone was saying, Discovery have cancelled SourceFed, Discovery have ditched YouTube channel SourceFed. Others were saying YouTube and Philip DeFranco have ditched and cancelled SourceFed. Well, no, it was actually a Disney-owned subsidiary that called, I think it was Cloud9 or something like that, I don't know. They made the decision to cancel SourceFed, and what they did is they took a lot of their brands and merged them into one. And again, Philip DeFranco had he created SourceFed, but he sold it to Disney along with all of this other stuff. And again, it's mainstream media that are jumping on those headlines. It's like Discovery are cancelling this YouTube channel, you know, Discovery are doing this, Disney are doing this. And it's just really annoying. And it really frustrates me as somebody that owns a website.
Tries to be accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm someone that's, I'm finding it difficult to find the balance between creating headlines that are not only accurate, but are intriguing enough to bring in viewers. And I don't want to be posting things like Disney drop PewDiePie, because that's not the truth. I don't want to be saying that Discovery cancelled SourceFed, because again, that's not the truth. But
a lot of people don't understand that these big companies have their hands in a lot of different places, but they don't actually interact with any of those subsidiaries.
Yeah, exactly. No, I absolutely. And it's just really hard, and I find it frustrating that these big companies are essentially reporting, I wouldn't necessarily, it's not false news, because no, it's you know, Disney owned Maker Studios, so yes it's inaccurate, and it's just really fucking frustrating.
I guess accurate but imprecise even.
I mean, people are just throwing out their journalistic rules and just like, well, if PewDiePie's in the news, let's put him in the news, and what's bigger than PewDiePie? Disney. Let's put it in the title, and people are gonna click on that.
Yeah.
People are losing their integrity over nothing.
Another thing of note from when I brought this topic up. So he announced in a tweet that he was going to be launching this Twitch channel called NetGlow, right?
Oh, God.
I just decided to go to twitch.tv/NetGlow. It has 86,000 followers already.
Of course
he hasn't done anything.
That's natural. Most subscribed, or one of the most subscribed YouTube channels is obviously just going to get free followers over on Twitch.
Yeah. Like,
I'm sure the fan base is overlap between Twitch and YouTube. So
there's 50 lot. Million of them. So
I'm sure PewDiePie could create a fart subscription box and he'd have 50,000 subscribers by the end of an hour.
Sure.
Yeah.
The problem is, I've not been paying a lot of attention to PewDiePie, but I thought that he was like a Let's Play gaming guy, but the latest videos that have kind of been highlighted, that he's just been sitting in a voice booth chatting shit.
And so here's how Let's Play and internet culture kind of works, is you get popularity by playing video games, basically. And then from that popularity, then you become a personality, and then you're able to basically do whatever, because now you can sort of embrace these weirder ideas because you now have that solid fan base. Like, it's something we were even talking about when Gage was streaming on Friday, is he's like, man, I wish I could just turn on the camera and stream and just talk about video games for a few hours, but like have fun trying to get viewers for that because nobody cares about my opinions because I'm a nobody.
Whoa. You slow down.
Whoa there, chill. Damn.
But the instant you're not a nobody and the instant you're fucking PewDiePie, you can just sit there and turn on a camera and it doesn't matter what the fuck you're doing.
Sure, but I mean, PewDiePie's not just sitting there spitting out nonsense. He's also been a pretty, you know, big vocal reason, and you know, YouTube changed a lot of their policies and saying, like, you know, this is bullshit. Why do you keep changing your policies like this? You're ruining smaller channels when they're trying to make money on it. They just changed their policies again when people are losing revenue left and right. So, I mean, he's not just in there being, you know, dumbass PewDiePie. He's also saying some, you know, worthwhile things, but
yeah, he's giving
you're not hearing
stuff,
you're not hearing about that because people like the Wall Street Journal are just running smut pieces on him to try and tear down YouTube for whatever reason.
Old media versus new media.
Yeah.
Well, Wall Street Journal is dying. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so, exactly.
If you're listening it's right now, dinosaur. Wall Street Journal, you're fucking dying.
They know that, though.
Wall Street Journal. I know you will listen to twitch.tv.
They know that, though. So why else would they publicize pieces about YouTube like that? Right. Like, obviously, they're trying to take them down with them.
I mean, YouTube's destroying modern TV at this point. So wait for CNN to be like, fuck YouTube.
My brother
entertainment.
My brother works at an AT&T store, so he sells phones all day. And AT&T recently bought DirecTV, which is like one of the biggest, like, well, not recently, like a couple years back, the biggest TV network in like the U.S. And so now Kevin has to now sell DirecTV to people, and he's like, "Cool, I have to try and sell people, you know, a DirecTV home package for like what is like $30 a month." And he's like, he's trying to sell people like, oh, you know, hundreds of channels, you know, you can stream with it, stuff like that. And they're like, oh, you know, I just watch Netflix. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I just have Hulu. And then while he was telling me this, he's getting pissed, right? Because he's like, I hate having to sell this. And he's like, you know what the combined cost of Netflix and Hulu is for like the premium subscriptions? $17 a month. I can't, we can't compete with $17 a month. It's pointless. I'm not going to sell that. I don't believe in this product. I can't sell that. Right.
But that's the whole debate between cable cutting and having all of these online streaming services. Like when YouTube announced their YouTube TV, like that is again another huge hit for cable TV. But if you wanted to get the things that are on Netflix, if you wanted to get the things that are on Hulu, Amazon Prime, YouTube TV, Showtime, HBO, that's going to cost you a pretty penny.
That's how you get to pick and choose, though.
That's why Game of Thrones is the most pirated TV show in existence.
Yep. But at the same time, it's like, at what point... I mean, if you think about it, we're getting into an era where that there are people that are, you know, moving out into their first home, whether it's like student accommodation, things like that, and they're looking at TV packages, and they're just like, just get Netflix. Like, people are never going to own cable TV at this, you know, this era. It's weird.
Yeah, but those guys already have Netflix. Like they're moving into their first home with essentially a TV subscription with Netflix already. They don't need to do anything else.
Yeah,
you don't even have to pay for YouTube. You can just, you know, have a YouTube app on your TV. You don't have to.
Especially
new 4K TV has a YouTube app.
Yeah, I have YouTube playing on my 4K TV right now.
In the UK we've got like the government is trying their hardest to kind of cling on to to the kind of traditional television watching markets, because before September last year people could freely watch like all of the like BBC on demand, whatever, the BBC ITV, all that stuff. They could watch catch up TV online, and the government were like, yeah, shit, we're kind of losing out on all these people. So now we to watch normal TV, we have to pay a TV license. I don't know whether that's something that you guys have in the US, but we have to pay something ridiculous, like £140 a year. I don't know exactly. It works out at about £11 a month to pay for a TV license. So you get the privilege to watch TV that has adverts and things like that. It's ridiculous. But now... Yeah. They realize that people are watching these on-demand services more than actual TV. They now say that you need to pay this £11 a month to watch catch-up TV. And it's ridiculous. It just shows how archaic...
They're just shooting themselves in the foot, though. That seems very unreasonable.
Yeah,
but at the same time, everyone pays that. I mean, I don't know any household that doesn't pay that.
We have a TV license, and we just watch Netflix just in case there's the one time that we want to watch live TV or we want to catch up on a program that we've maybe missed.
Yeah, I mean, I watch two shows that are on. You kind of
then you pirate it.
No,
then you go and you Google, you know, whatever show newest episode, and you find the file and you watch it on your TV.
But it's I don't know. It's definitely a cultural thing in the UK.
You're promoting illegal activity through our organization's podcast, Dylan.
No.
Subscribe today. No. Download on iTunes.
He's just pointing out what everybody and their mother does. So,
oh, like, fucking like, hell.
People do it, though. Like, that's the problem. No, like, when people make
I see your point.
Yeah.
No, I fully agree with you, but it's becoming that much of a problem in the UK that the government are like, you know what, you now have to pay for this fucking stupid thing that, I mean, there used to be advertisements sort of back in the 90s that were like, if you haven't got a TV license, we'll know. And they'd have videos of guys in the back of like an ice cream truck with a radar looking for people that are watching TV. And now there's just this nationwide paranoia of people sitting in the back of vans with a fucking satellite dish making sure that you're not watching TV. But
so true.
Yeah, it's
what I was going to say. It's a weird one, that, because it is a cultural thing in the UK. Like, everyone just has one. You don't even question it. You don't even work out whether you need it or not. You just get a TV license.
Yeah, you move into your new house and you're like, right, gas, electricity,
TV license.
TV license.
Yeah, 100%, yeah.
So weird.
Do you? I guess you don't have that in America.
No,
we don't have anything like that.
We have internet companies that throttle back what we can do.
Yeah, we have that. So
they're like, well, if they're going to watch, if they're going to try and stream, we're just going to make sure their internet can't work as well as they want, so they can't stream. They'll have to watch TV. Ha, 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 ha.
I mean, at least we have the benefit of having a kind of choice over our internet service providers. You have like three companies, don't you?
We have Comcastic.
There's a few companies, but there's like
isn't
three
there
Comcast, to have.
We have Comcast.
Isn't there Time Warner?
I believe we have Time Warner on the East Coast. I don't know about the West Coast.
There's Time Warner California. East Coast, a little south. There's also Frontier over where I live, but that's shit. I've got Comcast. Google Fiber's not where I live, but I mean...
Yeah, I wish we had Google Fiber, but we don't either.
Right.
They've stopped Google Fiber.
Oh, they have?
Have they?
They stopped the rollout, I think, to focus on essentially wireless.
Good.
I might have to double check. Let me...
There's also the fact that like every internet company has been lobbying to like shut down Google Fiber and stop Google from doing it because it would put them all out of business.
Boo-hoo. So. We'd lose shitty Comcast.
Google has paused fiber rollout in favor of wireless because essentially what they're thinking of doing now is the same as sort of phone internet. So there's going to be huge things that are just beaming internet speeds, and then you need a box that can receive that signal. I think that's the they have cancelled or put a pause on the rollout of Google Fiber.
Doesn't Verizon do their own like ISP type of thing?
Well, I mean they own AOL and Yahoo now, so
guys, I know I dropped out, but how did we get onto this?
Dylan brought up some weird topic and then Aaron hit him back with other PewDiePie stuff and now we're talking internet.
I brought up
PewDiePie. Are you buying the Project Scorpio or not?
No.
Favorite Pixar movie, go. The Good Dinosaur was a good film.
Didn't see it.
Nope.
Apparently it's one of the worst rated Pixar films.
I thought Cars 2 was the worst one.
Fuck.
I don't know.
I just, know just people burnt my lip. That really hurt.
Good fucking job, dude.
Ow.
Proud of you. Anyways, that was a pretty good rant, guys. That was a pretty good rant. We did a good job, I think. You know, we really broke a lot of, you know, laws, and
Not we.
Yeah, can we not say we, please?
We really are a bunch of just outlaws on the run.
You're using that we word again. I
I mean, I don't know who's illegally downloading here, but I'm not one of those.
For the record.
What's illegal downloading?
Comcast, are you listening? I definitely don't illegally download on your service.
I would never break a law, lest God Emperor Trump strike me down where I
stand. Emperor Trump?
He would just send you a tomahawk missile.
He's too busy golfing.
Jesus Christ.
All right, now
politics is a scary place because, you know, there's a lot of recent happenings coming out of the U.S. So I don't really want to get into that.
All right, so all I'm going to say now is, anyone got any closing remarks?
Fuck the U.S. Fuck the internet.
See, there's a mute button on Discord.
Aaron,
everyone go download Discord.
Pop in that
what else do we shout out?
Favorite Adam Sandler movie, go.
None of them. All of the ones existed before he was alive.
Why would you ask that? Oh, Adam Sandler's terrible.
Adam Sandler makes a lot of bad movies.
No, he doesn't.
Aaron's got the most unpopular opinion on this.
There's nothing wrong.
You're wrong, Aaron. You're wrong.
Please tell me. Come on, you hate watch it. That is one of the things that you like to hate watch. Oh, look, there's an Adam Sandler film on TV and there's nothing else to watch. No, I'm paying £11 a month for this fucking TV license.
I don't get that weird sensation where I like, well, I want to watch a movie that's so bad it's good. I don't get that. I don't have that in me to do that.
I really don't, though. I really do not.
Yeah,
I don't. It's weird, because since I've, gotten into watching Twitch more often and, watching just stuff on the internet, I have had little to no desire to go see movies. I don't know if that's just me or if it's you guys, but...
I go to the cinema at least once a week.
Wow, moneybags.
I'm jealous.
I'm definitely in the minority. I love it. The experience is
I go to the cinema every week and I don't even take my own snacks.
So true.
The thing is, I have every reason to. Like, I get free movie passes all the time. My father just brings them home from work. So.
All right, Dale, closing remark.
Humblebrag hour.
Yeah. Closing remark. Oh, God.
You have 5 seconds.
Oh,
if you do not respond fast enough, a tomahawk missile will land on your house.
Oh, no.
Wait, could we do our Americans try to pronounce British town name segment?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. Yeah, let's do it. Give me one.
Okay. Oh, no.
Put it in the Twitch chat. Chat. Put it in the staff chat.
Type it in Twitch chat. Twitch chat, actually.
Yeah. Chat. Okay. Yeah, so they can see what we're trying to pronounce.
Fair.
All right, I'm ready for this.
There you go.
Loughborough?
Well, clearly that's Loughborough.
Loughborough? I don't know, dude.
Clearly it's just Loughborough. Duh, easy. Give us a hard one, Aaron.
I'm waiting for the chat to catch up, so just so everybody is knows what I have. Okay, are you ready?
Yes.
It's Loughborough.
Loughborough? I can see that.
That was my nickname in high school. Sweet.
Okay, we'll do one next time. I'll look for the most obscure.
All right, we'll cap it off with one of these each time. But aside from that, I think that was Notable Podcast number 14.
Chat with video games on Fridays with me.
Yeah, chat with video games on Friday with Gage. He needs friends.
Wait, is that a thing?
I just talk about. Yeah. I usually play a game and just talk about video games. I'll take on opinions.
Wait, I'll be streaming
the
on Wednesday.
Sleep schedule of a 40-year-old crack addict like I do. Come and check me out at 2 a.m. when I'm playing Magic the Gathering.
That's what is that, about 12 o'clock UK? 12 noon?
Noon, I guess. Sure.
But yeah, with that, I'm going to hop out, play out some music, and I'll catch y'all guys next time.
Bye, everybody.
Hi, deuces.
Deuces, y'all.
Bye. Latest.